hey again, everyone. I'm Will Richardson, and I want to welcome you to Season 1 of the 2017 Modern Learners Podcast, where this year we're scouring the world for schools and districts that are raising the bar when it comes to thinking about relevant, sustainable change process that's centered on shifting agency over learning to the learner and in creating a culture both in schools and in their communities that embraces constant change and innovation. Transparency, self-reflection, and a commitment to learning together as adults and students all play a big role in their work. I've learned a great deal from their efforts, and I'm sure you will too. And remember, if you want to learn more about this podcast series, about our white papers, our masterclasses, or about our new 8-week course on modern leadership that we're launching in March, check out our private Modern Learners Facebook group, or head on over to modernlearners.com where you can sign up for our amazingly interesting and informative weekly newsletter that tracks all the opportunities and challenges of learning today. But for now, sit back and enjoy my conversation with Rodney and Aaron. Thanks for listening. I'm just wondering what the kind of burning question is that's driving the work in Henry County right now.
Sure. That's a great question too, and it's one that we feel like we finally have been able to come to terms with, and that really is the students that we're serving. And we've been able to really move away from being stuck in the box of having to protect adult practices and traditional methodology in order to be able to really look at how are we best serving our students, and are they really getting exactly what they need in order to be successful within the content and within the curriculum and within the educational environment. And when we ask that question, in our traditional methodology, the answer is no. And so this is a time, and particularly, I guess we all are in different times, but this is a time in Henry County when we've been able to honestly ask that question and then make a difference as to how we're going about the educational process to meet the needs of our kids. And I won't take too much of your time on the answer, but so you know where we are in Henry County, this is the time for us to be able to make that opportunity a reality. We went through a tremendous growth time when all we were doing was building schools and opening new schools and moving faculties around and hiring 700 teachers in a year. And all we could do was just try to, shore things up in an environment that we were already very familiar with. And then we hit a recession where we had to tighten our belt and make some hard decisions, which started to open our eyes and challenge our thinking. And now we're in a time where we have very small growth, and we're able to provide tremendous support and resources to our schools that we've not been able to provide before. And as the money is coming back and the opportunities are coming back, it allowed us to say, well, we're not going to just do the same thing we used to do because we had funds to do it. How can we go about making sure we change what we're doing in order to best meet the needs of our students? And so this has allowed us to do that.
So I'm just wondering, how did you get to that answer, no, right? When you ask the question, are we preparing our kids? Are we serving our kids? What was the process that brought you to, no, we're not?
I mean, I think we had some traditional indicators that said that we were okay, but we weren't great. So if you look at all the stuff that No Child Left Behind required you to attend to, we were okay. We were average, maybe slightly above the Georgia State average. But looking across the landscape of the United States, we knew we weren't making our kids competitive with the whole world. I think also we had a lot of discussion around college and career academies. And the idea that is this vision that every kid has to go to college, the best answer. And it didn't jive with any of us that was the right answer. So then you have to change your metrics of success and start thinking differently about what makes kids life ready.
I know that on your website you have two core beliefs that you've listed. And one of them is that students should have voice and choice. And the other is that schools should have autonomy and determining how that kind of goes forward. So kind of two parts to that one. So number one, how important is it that you have those clearly kind of articulated beliefs around where you're going? You have a big school district, right? About 40,000 kids, is that right?
That's right, right at 42. Yeah.
So in a district that size with a whole bunch of schools and a whole bunch of teachers, talk a little bit about why you have made those two kind of declarations at the top of the page.
Sure. Yeah, really, it goes back to your first question. Is at the core of what are we doing to best meet the needs of the students that we're serving? And I know it's a big bite at the apple to say we're going to do this district-wide, but as we reflect on that, it's been one of the best decisions that we've made in order to support that kind of philosophy across the entire district. If we had piecemealed this by individual schools and allowed for that second question to be their school autonomy, but we didn't have a vision of voice and choice or personalized learning for the entire district, I don't believe those individual schools would have been able to be successful because of a lot of other reasons we're going to get to probably later on, particularly as it pertains to support of the Board of Education and the community and all those others. So we do believe it is a core value of ours that our students are engaged in this work and that they have a voice and they're able to demonstrate their learning and mastery in a way that is most beneficial to them. And we as the adult practitioners have to provide that and support that. And I think our district approach has really given us the foundation in order for that to be successful.
So when you guys say voice, you know, a lot of people are talking about giving students agency, and there's kind of a spectrum of definitions as to what that is. You know, some school districts will talk about it in terms of giving kids choice in terms of how they get to the school district outcomes. Others will really look at it and say students have almost total agency over the what, the how, the when, all that kind of stuff. So when you say give them voice, what does that mean, and where do you kind of fall on that spectrum, and maybe where do you aspire to fall on that spectrum?
Yeah, I think currently we fall in the space where we're giving kids different options on how to meet some common goals. So high school graduation is important to us, but how kids get to that is very, very different. And so we have lots of district-wide options, whether it's through our virtual school, whether it's through dual enrollment and move on when ready options, whether it's through giving kids multiple ways to demonstrate mastery in a traditional model. We still have, you know, the state required 23 credits you have to get that diploma, but we're a lot more flexible in the way that we allow kids to get to that space. We used to be, even in our little steps so far, very, very lockstep into the options that kids had. You know, ninth graders took X courses, and then you might have a choice of one, and 10th graders took another X choices. And then by the time you got to be a senior, maybe you got to choose three out of your six or seven classes, but there was still kind of a lockstep expectation. We've really broadened that. Some of that is because of the state context in Georgia and the push for dual enrollment opportunities that has opened the doors to allow people to think differently about where kids get their education and what it looks like when they get it. We give kids a lot of voice and choice within those individual classes, though. And we really started thinking more about the instructional shifts we needed to make, knowing that each teacher really controls the outcomes of every classroom, that was the hitching point by which we had to begin to give kids voice. So even if we created all of these wild and crazy logistical pathways at the organizational structure, it still depended on the teacher to be the arbiter of whether a student had demonstrated mastery or not. So we've really focused on getting teachers to think differently about what does choice and voice look like for kids. And that's been a struggle. That's probably the hardest shift to make because teachers are traditionally viewed as, you know, the folks who know stuff. And who help make sure that kids learn that stuff that they know, and to say it's not about knowing particular things, but it's about demonstrating a set of skills against a common rubric instead of all having common experiences. That's a pretty big fundamental shift in the way you think about the role of a teacher and a student in education. And so, you know, we say a lot that we start with what we call the M&M choice, the idea that kids can have any color M&M that they want, but they still have to have an M&M. So they're still eating chocolate, even if they're allergic to it. but
eventually we were able to say, well, you know, what if they wanted to have, you know, a Skittle instead of an M&M? And it's kind of a continuum in that sense in the instructional space too, where we get teachers to do the M&M choice, and then they get to the choice where they pick different candy. And then, you know, not to take the analogy too far, but then they start offering up fruit or something. And then the kids start getting to the point where they say, hey, I don't want any of that. Can I do this? And that's really the core of this, is getting kids to be able to advocate for themselves and say, I see what you want me to do, and here's how I want to show you mastery of that. That's our true aspiration. That's what we really want to get to. And we're headed in that direction pretty strongly.
I think, you know, everybody I've talked to is on a path, right? And they're taking it at various speeds. They're at various places, but they are all engaged in this kind of long-term thinking about change. I'm just wondering, let's pretend we're 10 years from now. I mean, how much, if you keep moving in the direction that you want to go, how much student agency do kids have? I mean, does it get to the point where kids really can say, I want to learn about this in this particular way, and the teacher then kind of plays the role of connecting that to what we want them to learn? Or is it still kind of teacher starts it, or teacher kind of organizes what the outcomes are, but, you know, kids have just leeway and freedom to get to those outcomes?
Sure. In a you know, if our vision holds true, I think the first part of your thinking is something that we'd all aspire to have our district do. And, you know, once we really flesh out, and of course we're just early into the competency work, and once we've really got all of our competencies fleshed out, and we know exactly what it is we expect kids to be able to know and be able to demonstrate as far as mastery as they go through their educational experience, then I think you're 10 years from now, the door is wide open, if we're successful in these steps that we're taking now, to do just that, for kids to be able to say, I understand these are the things that I've got to master throughout my path of K-12, and have, I can't even visualize right now what that freedom might look like in order to experience that and demonstrate that. But certainly we are open to seeing what that looks like in the future as we continue to build this out. And I think that is part of the end game. You know, I think one of your questions probably will come up as far as how's, you know, education currently, public education in the United States right now. And I think it's changing. And for those who are not willing to change their methodology as far as from the traditional method of education, then they're going to not succeed in being able to meet the needs of kids. And so we're way ahead of that curve, and I would love to see a vision such as you describe, and something beyond what we can even imagine at the moment.
Well, I definitely want to get back to that change question, but I'm just wondering, you know, in terms of those things that kids need to be successful in their lives, I think a lot of people in education now are coming around to the idea that that's more about skills and dispositions. Absolutely. Than it is about, you know, about knowing stuff. So how do you struggle? You, I'm sure, are struggling with, well, how do you measure the immeasurable? How do you deal with the fact that a lot of the things that we want kids to be these days, and a lot of what we think is going to make them successful, doesn't really show up easily in a data point. So what does that look like for you guys as you struggle with that?
Yeah, so our thinking around that is really the reason why we are developing out the learner profile that we're building.
Talk a little bit about that, Aaron, okay? Just talk a little bit about that learner profile idea, because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, so our learner profile vision for us is really a space, and it's a digital space right now, where we have a bunch of information on students, but we have really taken the perspective that it's not for the adults to do to kids, but rather a place for kids to kind of have a scrapbook of their academic and experiential lives while they're with us. We think about it as a space for them to learn about themselves. So, you know, we look at Howard Gardner's multiple intelligences and how much that can inform us. And we talk about different learning modalities, and we talk about different ways that kids can express mastery, and think that it's important to have a historical record of that kids can refer to. So many kids, you know, they finish first grade and they get to second grade and they don't have any record of what they did. And even worse, not first to second, but, you know, third grade to 12th grade. to be able to be reflective on how they've grown as a learner, both with the academic skills that we value, but also, you know, we call out the four C's of the Partnership for 21st Century Skills, that idea of being a good communicator and a creative thinker and a collaborator, and really feel like a portfolio of evidence is the best way for kids to be able to justify in a really solid way. Look, I have evidence that I am doing these things that you think are important as I go on to life. We've partnered with our Chamber of Commerce to really think about job ready skills and what was it looking like for kids to be job ready when they graduate. And really that gets quantified in how they are able to stand up and do things like senior portfolios, where they say, I am ready to graduate from school, and this is the evidence I have that says that I'm ready to do so. And the learner profile is a tool by which we're able to track all of that. We also think very strongly a skill kids need is to be able to set short and long-term goals, and then be able to demonstrate evidence of attaining those goals. And then also equally important, if they don't attain the goals, be able to say, well, that goal, I thought it was important when I started, but I didn't finish it because it wasn't that important. And this other one superseded it as I learned on my own. And so being reflective and metacognitive, all that stuff is good when you talk about it, but if you don't have a record of it to be able to look back on and to solidly kind of document, then it just becomes talking points instead of an actual, you know, experiential record of their learning. And so that's what the Learn Profile is for us. It's got in it a way for us to give feedback to kids. So not only are they being reflective on their own, but they have all these feedback loops where they can say, I set this goal, or I have this piece of evidence, and I have my peers and I have my parents and I have my teachers giving me feedback on it so I can improve it. And it tracks all of that so that you can see over time how you are getting better. You know, it reminds me of, you know, Facebook right now is really big on throwing up memories from when you were back first members in Facebook.
And I know. I just saw that for the first time.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's very similar to that, where, you know, we're not automating that like they are able to do. But really, it allows you to say, oh, yeah, this is a scrapbook of my learning that is both evidence and also an opportunity for you to say, how do I get better? And so that's what the learner profile is for us. And that's different than a lot of other kind of visions of it. A lot of people wanted to make, or are continuing to make, learner profiles that take pictures of kids and look at different data points and then push content to them in ways that they feel are tailored to the kids. And we think really it's not about tailoring content to kids necessarily. It's about giving kids the power to learn how to tailor content to themselves, so they know what they need to go out and look for in a really tight partnership with the adults in their lives who are mentors and tutors and teachers, not just givers of knowledge. And so that's kind of how we're thinking about using the learner profile.
And you guys are also very devoted to what you call authentic project-based learning, and I'm sure that that's a big part of what's going to end up in that learner profile, right? The types of those types of experiences. So let me ask you just really fast then, because that's an easy question, right? Here's the hard one. So how do you get teachers to be authentic project-based learners as well? And how do you or are you developing a profile of a learner for them as well?
So, yeah, we are. We're actually, so it's been interesting as we develop out the learner profile, you know, all of the tech companies out there build all of those platforms based on rosters in a really traditional way of thinking about the organization of school. So when we first started down the road and said, well, we want to create learner profiles for teachers as well, there was a technical challenge that they were like, well, who's the teacher of the teacher class? And how do we make that work? And we don't have a way to build that. So we've had to, you know, that little small piece of the technical side of it, I think, is indicative of a bigger problem of not looking at teachers as learners as well, you know, across the spectrum of public schools. And so we're making that shift. We are tailoring professional learning to teachers based on the goals that they set for themselves. We are very much moving away from the sit and get or spray and pray models of professional learning. And really challenging teachers to engage in ways that are meaningful to them, and building out competency-based kind of professional development expectations for teachers to say, you know, we think all teachers should be good teachers of reading. 80% of you might be that way right now. Give us a body of evidence that shows that you are, instead of necessarily putting them through a training. And so we're trying to build the learning experience for our professional educators to mirror and match what the experience experiences we want our kids to have, because most of our teachers, you know, didn't grow up. I would venture none of our teachers grew up in a model that was either competency based or reflective of that idea of voice and choice. And so we are trying to mirror that in their learning so they can help deliver that to kids in a really strong partnership.
So Rodney, I want to get back to that change question. So I'm interested, do you think that the biggest pressure point right now on schools is relevance? Because, I mean, that's kind of your answer at the beginning, right, as to why you see the need to change in terms of you're not preparing kids for the worlds that they're going to live in. Is that the biggest pressure point right now? And what might be some others, if that, or what might be the biggest one in your mind?
Yeah, I think making learning relevant is critical. And we know the success behind student learning when learning is relevant for our students. And one of the things I have to kind of back up just a little bit too, and everyone's in a different place, I know, in this journey. But one of the things and what's going on in Henry County, and Aaron has alluded to it already a couple times, is the community prime and ready for this type of massive change?
Right.
And being able to recognize that it is important that the learning is relevant for their students.
So let me just jump in really fast, because I do want you to talk about how you build the capacity of your community to embrace or at least understand the changes that that you're making in your district. But I'm wondering too, is the community becoming a pressure point for change?
The community became a pressure point for change. We went through a very large community program that was sponsored and supported by our Chamber of Commerce several years ago, which we call Economics and Education. We called it E-Squared. And an outcrop of that was the community's desire to see a college and career academy in Henry County. And so because of that, we were able to start the relative learning discussion within the community on why this is so important for our students learning to be relative to the needs of the community, to the needs of their learning. And we've now have one of the largest college and career academies in the state, and that has been a catalyst to allow us to expand that into our 2020 vision of personalized learning at each school at the content level. And that's where I think a community has to be prime. The community as a whole, and when I say community, I'm talking the big business leaders and the politicians, and all of those were at the table at the time to say, you know, we are not preparing our students to be successful, to stay and work and live and pray and experience their time here in Henry County. What can we do with our educational system to help us keep kids here and to make their learning experience relative to the needs of the county? And we've just been able to use that as a launching point to really get full community involvement. Because when you have the key movers and shakers that are supporting you and saying this is the right work, even though they don't fully understand what this transitionary work necessarily looks like, then we were primed as a county to take that well beyond just what we call our college and career academy or our CTAE courses. We were able to take that into the general curriculum as a whole, K-12. And it's really because the community was crying out for change at some level for relevance. And we've been able to expand upon that. And it was just been a phenomenal opportunity for us that we really have, I think, have done a great job of taking advantage of.
Yeah, I think we've had to give the community words to talk about it, though, right? So there was this sense that something needed to be different, but not really clarity on what that difference was, other than we know that our kids are not getting what they need because they're coming back from college, or they're not going to college, or, you know, it's not working out for them. And our chamber and our business community saying, you know, the kids that are applying for our jobs aren't ready to work for us. So there was a sense that something needed to be done, and it took the willingness to think differently about what that would look like if we did something that would help address that need. But I will say there's still a lot of hesitation when you talk about competency-based learning and the idea of a competency-based diploma or moving from grade to grade based on demonstrated mastery. You know, that's going to be a touch point for a lot of folks as we walk down the road, because we're going to say, just because June showed up doesn't mean that you're ready for the next grade level, but it doesn't mean that we're retaining you either. It just means you got some skills you got to work on. Those are going to be hot hot items for individual families and parents to address as they move forward. But I think our willingness to be transparent, to engage them in those discussions. We require parents to be a part of our redesign teams at our schools. I mean, they're in the discussion along the way, and we work really hard to make it so that we're not doing this change to the community, we're doing it with the community. And that's something we've had to be very, very particular about with our principals and our school team leaders, and really push back hard to say, people will come along in the community if they see the value of the work that you're doing. And they just need to, know that you're being transparent as you walk through it.
Yeah, and I really believe that if you're not feeling some pushback, you're probably not changing enough.
Yep.
And so that's that kind of fine line that you have to get to, right? So you're telling a different story, and you're changing the story, the narrative that most people are familiar with when it comes to schools, whether that's project-based learning, whether it's competency-based learning, moving agency to kids, not having those kind of typical homeworky types of things that, we've all known and loved in the past. So you mentioned Aaron transparency. So how do you make that new story more transparent? I mean, I hear you when you say that you have parents that are engaged in those conversations from a kind of planning or from a philosophical standpoint. But then, when it becomes real in classrooms, how are you guys transmitting that, communicating that, sharing that out so that people know, oh, okay, so this is what it actually looks like?
So in our redesign models, as we have our schools go through it, and they spend a year and a half planning, and then they launch. And they launch the redesign in a way that makes sense for their individual school community. So some of them are more aggressive than others, but they're all within the tenets that we've articulated as a district. Once they launch, we have a requirement we call the Pay It Forward plan, where we require those schools to open their doors to people to come in and see what's going on. And so all of our schools have an obligation to create a tour of sorts. And in that tour, they have two obligations. One is to open the doors of the school and let people see what's going on without much fanfare. I mean, we don't want them to make it anything that's too theatrical or scripted, but just come and see the real things that we're doing. And then they have another part of that where they ask people to help them get better. And so as people visit, they're not necessarily just saying, here's where we are, we're awesome. They're asking the question, what did you see that we could be better at? Or what questions do you have that we haven't thought about? And being very intentional about ensuring that schools have to do that part of it, I think is something that's very different for most schoolhouses. You think of the schools who have a sign up that says, you can only come visit your classroom if you have an appointment 18 weeks ahead of time. And we're saying, right, come on in whenever you can come in to see what's going on. I think that in and of itself is really, really a simple answer, but something that's so dynamic because it says to the community, we're not hiding anything. We want to get better, and we all want to learn together and how we get better at this work. So that's part of it. The other part of it is just inefficient conversation with lots of people. It's not a quick shift for people who are used to something that's been around for 100 years. And so they need time to process and work through it. And there's no magic, newsletter or website or number of meetings that you have to have. But it's about a willingness to say, we'll sit down with every single person that has questions about it and spend the time it takes to answer their questions, whether that's a teacher or a principal or a parent, or whether that's Rodney and I spending time with all of those different groups as well. That's really, I think, what's worked for us is that willingness to take the time it takes to talk through it and really think deeply about, all right, where are you coming from and why are you concerned and how can we address that?
And we'll it's not as sexy a part of this conversation, but I think a critically important thing that we've got to discuss and realize is the support of the Board of Education. And as we've rolled this out through cohort after cohort after cohort, with our board being fully behind this vision, even early on with the challenges that we had of answering questions and figuring this out together, with our board standing firm behind the vision, it's given each individual school within those cohorts the opportunity to take the time to figure out their communications, to work with their communities in order to make sure that they fully articulate what this work looks like for the students that they're serving under a very protective dome that the board's not going to swoop in after X number of complaints and say, this is over, you're done. And I think that's been critical to our success as a district as a whole, and why I think it was the best move for us to go district-wide over a five-year period of time, because we've got that support of the board. If that had not been there, if we had given the autonomy to an individual school to step out there to do this work, then the board itself would have collapsed potentially after X number of complaints or questions or whatnot, and the support wouldn't be there, and then the risk factor wouldn't be there for those working in that building. I mean, we've said this over and over again, this is very courageous work, and when you're doing something very courageous, you've got to know that you're supported in your risk. And so the board is huge in this change and allowing individual schools to tell their story and get that community buy-in. And without their support, it just wouldn't happen.
So Rodney, I have to tell you, one of my highlight moments of 2016 came at the end of the day that I spent with you guys last fall, when you got up in front of your leadership team and said something to the effect of, the only person that's going to get fired in this district if this fails is me, right?
I still have my job today.
Is you, right? So, you know, it's not just the board, but it's also your leadership team and your teachers know that you've got their backs, and that you know, these are the expectations. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of the dispositions that you think leaders need to have when they enter into these types of, I mean, some pretty big change processes that they know are going to take a long period of time, and that are going to be complex and aren't going to be smooth and all that sort of stuff. I mean, what do you see as the most important attributes of those types of leaders?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad it was a pivotal moment for you that year, because it was for us as well. Mm-hmm. That was you witnessed, and we all experienced climbing over the top of the mountain that day, that moment with our principals. We are on a downhill slope at this point, really making this work. And I was able to express that same sentiment to my board just this past Monday night about our experience together at that principal's meeting and what that looked like. And I think the answer to your question is those leaders have to have the trust and the faith that they're going to be supported in doing what they know in the core of their heart is right for kids. And yeah, we've got CCRPI scores that we'll look at. We've got SAT, ACT, all the test scores, all those data points are out there that are extreme stressors for any leader who focuses in on that. But they have to know that they are in a risk-free environment, for which, as long as they're working to change what the educational experience looks like for our students to meet their true needs through rigor, relevance, and relationships, then they have our full support. And you know, I praise our early adopters, the first six schools in our first cohort that reached out there and trusted us that we would support them, and they have fought major battles on the front for all the other principals behind them. And what you witnessed that day was that battle being won. And those principals in the room that had not yet raised their hand saying, I get it, I'm going to have the support, and it's going to work. And you heard one of the principals, I think, ask the question, you know, what are the steps? What is it I have to do?
Right.
What does it look like? And the answer was, you tell us.
Right.
You know, you figure that out for your school and your community, and you have our full support. And that was the first time that it may feel like commonplace to you, but that was the first time that that room of principals was able to truly open their hearts and minds and dialogue with each other about what this is looking like. And it's that was a pivotal moment, and we'll speak about that moment for many, many years to come, particularly as we get closer to fulfilling our goal of our 2020 vision. So I'm glad we both had that same takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, just so you know, I mean, one of the it's not that commonplace. I think that there are a lot of people that are hoping to get to that point, to that moment. That's one of the reasons why I'm impressed with the work that you guys are doing, because you seem to have done it at a scale that I don't think most people would take on. And you've kind of moved all the parts at the same time. I mean, a lot of places where I go, there's a lot of capacity building that has to be done before, you know, the molecules can start to move. And it feels like, I know you've been on, you know, you have a 5-year plan, and you probably feel like you've been doing this for, you know, decades, but but it feels like you've done a pretty decent job, if not a really good job, of making a lot of stuff happen in a short period of time. I mean, so why did that happen with you guys? What made that the case in Henry County?
Again, I think it's all about timing. And for us, as I shared a little earlier, this, I think we had a sense of urgency that I was able to share and that everyone understands that this is our 5-year window to get it right in Henry County. With our growth that we went through, with the recession that we went through and where we are now, and the growth that we're going to experience again in the future. I don't know if I've shared, but the Atlanta Regional Commission is projecting that we're going to double in population between the years 2030 and 2040. And so the growth is coming back. We'll be 80,000 students at some point in time. And so if we don't do this hard reboot of making sure that we're personalizing the educational experience for our kids based on what we know in the core of our heart is the right work for students, it's not going to happen when we're, you know, enrolling tons of students at a time and hiring all those new teachers and building new buildings. If that is not a core operational process of the district, it will not happen. So I think that sense of urgency is upon us all. And I think it's just all about timing. And I don't know where other districts are in that same process, but this was our window, then we couldn't miss the opportunity.
I think it was also a willingness to examine everything that we were doing. You know, one thing that I credit Rodney with in making this happen is that he doesn't make quick decisions. He's very thoughtful in when we actually change something, have we considered all the different sides of it? But once the decision's made, it's purposeful and intentional and moves us forward. And I think it's not a matter of going slow for the sake of going slow. It's a matter of saying, have we thought through all the good, bad, and ugly of this and then made a good call moving forward? And there's nothing that we've ever asked or talked about that he didn't say, yeah, let's look at it and see if there's a better way. So I think that continual, you know, inner drive to always say, are we doing things the best way that's possible? And even if we were doing it the best way that was possible last year, are we still doing it the best way that's possible this year? You know, it's a small piece, but every year when we set the agenda for each board meeting, we look at what we were doing last year at that same month and say, are these things still relevant to us to bring before the board and to think about? And so it's that same cycle of saying, how do you hold on to those things that are good while having an eye to always making things better? So I think being intentional but being courageous at the same time are really important dispositions for the leadership of this kind of change movement. And then I think also that willingness to say, we don't have an answer, but we know there's one out there if we do enough thinking and enough learning and enough talking to other folks. I think that's also something that a lot of school leaders in particular aren't willing to do. They want to make sure they get it right because people who come back into education played the game of school pretty well. So they're generally not the entrepreneurs and they're generally not the risk takers. Those kids are the ones who failed out of school. And so being able to push that edge so that they're not all the rule followers, you got to be able to work through that and recognize that people want to follow rules because they want to do right, not necessarily because they're trapped or anything like that, but because they want to make sure. I mean, this is serious business. This is kids, and they want to make sure that they're doing it right. So the willingness to say we trust who you are as people, that you actually have that at your core, and speaking that into existence and acknowledging that, I think has been a really powerful part of the change as well.
So one of my favorite bloggers, Harold Jarkey, up in Canada, has a couple of phrases that I really like. And one of them is that we're now in a mode of perpetual beta, where you're never going to be done with this. You guys know that, right? You're never going to wake up one morning and say, okay, we did it. We're done. And the other phrase that he uses is that learning is now the work, right? That we have to be constantly learning. So Aaron, you kind of touched on it there a second ago, but given that change is, and this is a phrase I've been using a lot in these interviews, is that change is a moving target, right? That it's something that is, it's never going to be static, and it's going to have to be revisited over and over again. So I'm wondering if you guys could just, you know, briefly talk a little bit about, so how do you keep up with that? I mean, how does learning end up being the work in what you do, and how do you deal with the idea that, you know, it's just perpetual change now. It's not something that is ever going to be finished, or that's ever going to be even kind of static for a short period of time.
Sure. From a district level, from a big perspective, I think a real example of that is Locust Grove Middle School. And it comes back down to having the trust as well. And the model that's in place today at Locust Grove is dramatically different than what they rolled out in their first year of their personalized learning efforts. And so they've learned, they continue to learn and grow and develop. And I think it's about being reflective. It's about being open-minded. It's about listening just as much as you try to direct and make those changes that are best needed in order to improve upon the learning experience for your students. So as you're exactly right, learning never stops. And I think one of the things, again, and you'll hear me always talk about the big support, but it, you know, if Locust Grove had ducked their head and turned away when they rolled out their model and said, this is what's going to be great for kids, and then they realized there was some areas in there that were not successful, and they didn't learn from that, and we didn't give them the support to say, you didn't fail, you're just growing, they wouldn't be where they are today, and they're not where they're going to be 5 years from now. I think the learning approach comes to, again, having that faith and trust and support, and allowing that to happen organically within our community and within our system and within those schools.
I think you alluded to the very beginning about what are those evidence points that you're doing this well? How do you measure something that appears to be immeasurable? And I think having a really clear focus on what Alex Hernandez, I'm sure he borrowed it from somebody else, but said to us when he first came and spoke at our first convening, he talked about, you know, making sure that you were focused on your North Star. And so our North Star in Henry County is really about that idea of voice and choice for kids. And so all the logistics and the organizational structures and the things that you can count, those are shifting. But you still have that one consistent thing that is, are we really listening to kids, and are we meeting what kids are saying are their needs while we help them figure out what their needs are, right? It's not about saying, you know, turn everything over to them and get out of the way. I mean, the adults are still an important part of, you know, building a community. But I think having that as a constant allows you to more effectively handle the things that change on a day-to-day basis. And so I think it's not that change is always the constant, because that implies that you're kind of wandering through the wilderness blindly. But it's more about saying there's a destination, and that's making sure that we're making kids the kind of kids that we want to have moving to the house next door to us, because they're good citizens. And as long as that's your goal, you might want the lawyer in your house next year. You might want the kid who's going to cut your grass. You might need a plumber next door to you. And so all of those outcomes look different, but you still are a part of a community. And I think that's the thing that helps us to keep our eyes on the prize, as all of the logistical and organizational things begin to shift.
So if there are people out there who are listening to this and are thinking, yeah, it's time, we really need to make some serious changes in the way that we practice, the way that we think, what would be your advice here as a last question, as to where to start? You know, what's the first step that you think people need to take in order to, you know, get on this path of a long-term, sustainable, relevant change process in schools?
I think you have to start with your first question. What is at the core of your work? And what do you believe students should be able to experience with their educational opportunities? And if you truly take a strong look at that, and if you know that the traditional method of providing an educational model for our students is no longer acceptable, then it forces you down the path of being able of having to redefine what that looks like. And then that forces, that challenges all of your beliefs about what you should be doing. And I mean, and the start comes with, I think we were intentional, but we were also gifted in the fact that, like I shared earlier, our community kind of rallied around a need that we've been able to launch from. I think you've got to find a way to make this a community effort, make sure that, and I would encourage folks to give strong consideration to making it a district work and not individual school work, for probably a whole other hour worth of discussion. But I mean, I think you just have to truly be reflective. And as we've talked about this for years, but I think this was the first time in my career as an educator that I truly saw us making a real effort to make this a reality. Is it's not about what's best for adults. It's what's best for the children that we serve. And we've been able to take that to heart and to really share that with our leaders and with our educators in the district and give them the freedom to believe that that's true through the support that we've provided for them. And they've done, this is far beyond what Aaron and I have been able to envision. I mean, the work that they're doing in those buildings, the experience that those students are having in our schools is far beyond what I could have envisioned. And so it made me smile when you ask about 10 years from now. I can't even imagine what that
Ron will be at the house. Ron will be at the lake somewhere.
Can't even imagine.
You know, one thing that we tell our schools, or we ask our schools to do when they start the conversation with their community, because that's a scary thing for a lot of educators to do, is we don't want to start with a plan. We want to start with the question, what do you want your kids to look like when they've left this school? So if I'm in elementary school, you sit down and whether you call it a chalk talk or whatever you want it to be, and you just open that question up to your parents. What do you want your kids to know and be able to do as a result of having had 5 years at this elementary school? And that's it's a scary but also safe way to start that discussion around what do we value, what do we think is important, and then all the structures and organizations and the moves that you need to make. Get connected back to that. And I think way too often folks trying to do school reform start with the moves and then come up with the reasons. And they also limit the moves that they make based on what they think they can do instead of what they should do. And so I think it's really about connecting to, you know, what do we value? And then building things around what we value and being willing to throw away those things that don't jive with what you value. Even if there's an accountability metric out there that says you got to do this, if it doesn't match up with what you value as a community, then you just have to say, well, we're not going to do well on that measure and we're doing that on purpose. So we're going to go worry about this thing over here that we value. And that takes some courage, but I think you get buoyed by the community supporting you in that. And those things are usually big and lofty and hard to define, but it helps you to be able to then move in the right direction and say, you know, we agreed that this was important, kids being able to communicate effectively. So that's what we're building, is a way to allow that to happen. I would say that's a good starting point for schools as they walk through this. And then the last thing I'll add is one thing that we've had to do at the district level is, and Ronnie's alluded to giving them cover, is we've had to be very, very intentional about saying, you can stop doing X. Whatever it is we said that you needed to do 5 years ago, you don't have to do that anymore. Stop doing it. Because school people, like I said earlier, are rule followers. And there are lots of folks out there who said, you had a memo you sent out 4 years ago that said we had to do this. You've been doing it for 4 years, even though you forgot you sent that memo. And so we have to be very intentional and tell people that they have permission to stop doing things. And I think that's one of the more powerful things district leaders can do to help schools.
Yeah. And I'll finish that just by adding that this is the work of the entire district. And if there are districts out there that are looking to do this through the work of a particular department, it's not going to work. We come together every Friday, the senior leadership team, and we challenge each other. You can only imagine Aaron giving us some challenge, but we, with his wild thinking, but we challenge each other and we support each other to work through it. And so my HR person knows what this is all about. My finance person knows what all of this is about. And the technology person is at the table and curriculum folks, and we're all there together. And we own this vision as a district. And it's not something that we said, let's go get a personalized learning department, put it in place, let them see what they can do, and we'll go about our business until they're successful. It will not work that way. And I think, unfortunately, that may have been the route that some people have taken in the past that's not been successful for them.
Well, Rodney and Aaron, I really, really want to thank you for your time. You guys are doing great work in Henry County, and I know I'm going to be interested in watching where you go. Hopefully, be around 10 years from now to see where you guys end up. But sincere best wishes on your work and continued success.
We appreciate that, and we're looking forward to you coming back in June.
Yeah, so am I. Looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.